In the Uber game, who wins? Is it you who feels like you get the ride quicker than standing on a corner? Or is it Uber who sets the price and when it surges, you have to decide how much this Uber business is worth to you? For instance, are you one of these kind of people? I'm in a hurry. Go for it. Hey, thanks. 89th in Amsterdam, please. Or are you one of these kind of people?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, that's highway robbery. Forget you, Uber. What's a little rain, anyway?
The who wins in the Uber game is actually a sophisticated question of economics. And the Uber service allows economists to examine for the very first time how consumers respond to price changes in real time. In a new paper out this week, a team of economists looked at data from over 54 million user sessions from four cities, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York, from the first half of 2015. How many people are requesting cars, at what price points, and when users decide the price has gone too high. A gold mine. Steve Levitt, Freakonomics co-author and economist at the University of Chicago, was a co-author of the paper. He passed along the findings to Stephen Dubner, host of Freakonomics Radio. And Dubner says while the perception of surge pricing may make people feel like losers, the data shows something else, something radically different, in fact.
There are some essential truths in economics that the more you talk to economists, you find out are a little more truthy than truthful. In other words, they're kind of theoretical representations of the way the world works as opposed to measured representations. And one of those very foundational ideas is what's called the demand curve. So if you've ever taken Econ 101, you've seen that demand curve that someone will get up and draw on the board, usually the first day of class, and it shows you know, as price rises, demand for most goods will fall and so on. And then there are obviously different permutations of that. The problem is measuring a demand curve in the real world is hard to do. Why? Because the way prices work, you don't change prices on things all the time. In most cases, you go into the store and apples cost what they cost. And so what you want to know is exactly how much demand there is for things at a given price. And then at a given price plus, let's say, 1%, plus 2%, plus 10%. And that's the kind of thing you can get at with the Uber data, thanks to what they have, which is called surge pricing.
Okay, so I take public transit. I pay one price. I don't want it rising when it's rush hour, although there will be a rush hour fee that I'll pay. That's fine. When it starts raining, I don't want to pay a higher fee. Uber surge pricing is gouging when the rain opens up and you start getting poured on.
Says the person who's read a lot of communist manifestos, I would say.
So, come on.
So, well, you know, surge pricing, from an economic standpoint at least, means that you have a better way to let demand and supply meet where they want. So, you know, here's the famous example. You know, where most of the anti-price gouging laws come into play have to do with if there's a storm coming or something, right? And if there's a storm, what happens? A lot of people go to the Lowe's or the Home Depot or whatever, and they buy all the flashlights, all the batteries, all the bottled water. So that the next people that come, well, they were willing to pay. Maybe they were willing to pay double, but there is none left. Why? Because all those people kind of overbought. So that's what happens when you've got a static price. The idea of something like Uber or many other realms in which there's dynamic pricing. I mean, in some realms, we call it dynamic pricing, the airlines, hotels, and so on. And we're used to it in those realms. We're not used to it in other realms. And so what Uber does with surge pricing is, yes, allows the demand to meet the supply where it wants to. And you may dislike that a lot. If you want a ride, however, you have a choice. You can either stand where you are for longer to wait and pay the same, a taxi or a bus or whatever, or you can stand for shorter time and pay more. But getting away from the morality or the practicalities even of surge pricing, what surge pricing does in a database is allows for an economist to look at, yes, as you said, exactly how consumers make purchasing decisions in a way that is way more empirical, way more quantifiable than just about anything that economists have come up with before.
So what did the data show? That consumers were paying more than they needed to, or Uber was benefiting inappropriately? How do you evaluate this data?
quite the opposite. What Levitt was using these Uber data to try to measure was what economists call consumer surplus. And consumer surplus generally is the difference between what you would be willing to pay for something and what you actually pay. And it turns out that in a given year in the U.S. alone, the consumer surplus produced by Uber is in the neighborhood of $7 billion with a B dollars, John.
Consumer surplus is one of the most important things in economics. It's one of the incredible beauties of the market system is that for so much of what we buy, we would have been willing to pay way more for it than we actually have to.
And so Uber's argument there, according to Steve Levitt, is that, in fact, Uber could have gotten a lot more money with its surge pricing system, and that far from gouging people, it's actually taken a hit.
You know, it's one of the trickiest things that any firm, not even firms, individuals, if you're selling your home, it's one of the trickiest things that you have to do, which is set a price, right? And so one thing that the digital world allows us to do is adjust. Now, the fact is, a lot of people, including you, John Hockenberry, sound leery of that kind of adjustment because it feels unfair. But the fact is, if producers and consumers can take advantage of digital technology to let the market make itself more kind of robustly, more tightly, yeah, there will be opportunities for consumers. And right now, even though you might dislike Uber, you'd still have to recognize that they're providing a service that a lot of people are using and would willingly pay more for.
Does this data say that Uber should raise its prices and should start doing that immediately to tell its shareholders, yeah, we're going to get rid of this consumer surplus?
Well, that's a really good and kind of nuanced question. So it's really hard for me to say yes or no. Could they bring in more money? Almost certainly yes. Would that be the, quote, right thing to do? Well, you know, one could argue that providing consumers with a big surplus is a wonderful thing to do on many dimensions. Will Uber eventually have to raise prices in order to close the gap because they did lose a bunch of money the last 6 months? Look, I don't know. I don't know if anybody really can profess to know. One thing that's interesting to note, however, is this consumer surplus is large now, even when you're paying a bunch of human drivers. One thing to think about is Uber, among many others, is moving as fast as it can toward an autonomous car future. So you can imagine that even though that technology will be more costly up front, eliminating drivers potentially creates even more consumer surplus from a service like Uber. It may end up years from now, maybe not so many years from now, that it costs you less to get to the grocery store than to even buy that first apple. That's kind of the direction we're moving in.
Stephen Dubner is host of Freakonomics Radio, the latest episode all about Uber and the surge pricing model. And this data is out today. You can find it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Stephen Dubner, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, John.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.